This week in KMA Land, Thanksgiving weekend winter weather wallops KMA Land. Page County snowplow supplies set for winter onslaught. Winter-related accidents keep state patrol troopers busy. Page County supervisors discuss courthouse repairs. Fremont County supervisors spend opioid settlement bucks. And Montgomery County Board hears Waubonsie funding pitch. I'm Mike Peterson. After a tranquil Thanksgiving Day, weather in KMA Land the rest of the holiday weekend was a real turkey. The first major snowfall of the winter of 2025-26 created travel headaches in most of the region, with episodes Sunday through Monday. Michaela Wood is a meteorologist with the Weather Service's Valley, Nebraska office. Wood tells KMA News much of southeast Nebraska and southwest Iowa received anywhere from 2 to 4 inches of snow last weekend, with snow totals increasing towards the Omaha and Des Moines areas.
And the snow totals progressed pretty quick as you went northward out of there, got a good anywhere from 4 to 6 in the Omaha area, and then as you go into more in the central Iowa area, they got 9 inches and even upwards of that some areas. So it's been a pretty busy holiday weekend, especially with all the travel. It's been pretty impactful and first good snowfall of the season for a lot.
Motorists in some parts of KMA Land, including Page and Fremont counties, dealt with continuing snowfall Monday morning.
We got a good round of snowfall across the area, anywhere from 1 to 2 inches, and then kind of decaying northward out of there. So it's been a pretty busy start to the winter weather season, and it's not quite over yet. It's going to be pretty chilly today, some highs likely only peaking in the low to mid-20s.
And that prediction was correct because it was cold the rest of the week. Page County Secondary Roads personnel were among those spending Thanksgiving weekend handling snow removal efforts. Page County Engineer J.D. King told KMA News crews were at it Saturday and Sunday, then returned to the roads Monday.
The roads were pretty slushy, heavy snow there initially on Saturday, and it came up pretty decently. We did not put material down in case the lighter snow toward the end of the storm was prone to blow a little bit, so we didn't put material down Saturday or Sunday. We did a little bit on Monday, various spots.
King says preparations for another winter began long before the snow fell last weekend.
We've been working on getting ready for winter for the last couple months, servicing our trucks, getting snow plow equipment hitched on, and plows and wings and tailgate sanders. We've got salt in the salt bin.
King says one task not completed before the first snowfall involved erecting snow fences along the county roads, prone to drifting problems.
The conditions weren't right for us to get in the fields after harvest and put up that snow fence. So we're hoping the weather turns fit to do that. It'll take a little frost so we don't make ruts in farmer fields, but can't be too much frost to get the posts through. So we'll just have to see what the weather does.
Like other officials, King reminds motorists to shift to winter driving skills, slow down, use seat belts, and prepare your vehicle for winter weather's onslaught. Snowfall and slick roads were abundant throughout KMA Land and other parts of Iowa during the Thanksgiving holiday weekend. Trooper Ryan DeVault is Public Resource Officer with the Patrol's District 3 office. DeVault tells KMA News that statewide between noon on Friday and noon on Sunday, the patrol received 856 calls for service, including 210 crashes, 20 of which with injury, and 646 motorists' assists. Particularly in southwest Iowa, DeVault says the patrol responded to 41 motorist assists, 15 property damage accidents, and 2 personal injury accidents.
The motorist assist can consist of anything from broke down motorists to somebody that slid off the roadway, maybe didn't have any vehicle damage to be reportable, but ended up down in the ditch.
Fortunately, DeVault says throughout the 4-day extended weekend, no fatalities reported in Iowa's roadways. As of Monday, 251 fatalities had been reported in Iowa's roadways, down 62 from this time last year and down 68 from the 5-year average.
We're still shooting for that under 300, so, you know, I pray we stay at 250 and we don't have any more, but you know, our goal has been for many, many years now to get below 300, which has never been done in the inception of the state patrol.
While noting that 1 or 2 inches of snow can cause just as much trouble as heavier amounts, DeVault says the highest concentration of accidents came from the east side of their district, where snowfall totals were higher.
As you moved further to the northeast from the Shenandoah area up towards Interstate 80, kind of halfway between Council Bluffs
in our Stewart area, that seemed to be, you know, a pretty hot spot in there. Other than that, you know, it was pretty well just standard see one here, see one there type of weekend.
Well, not in the KMA Land listening area. DeVault says one patrol car was hit while on the side of the road while on the scene of an incident. More alarming, he says, was that five Iowa DOT snowplows were also struck by vehicles while out on the roadway. DeVault says the plows typically only run between 10 and 35 miles per hour, meaning motorists can come up on them quickly.
With those snowplows, obviously they kick up a big snow dust cloud behind them. So when you get right behind them, it's going to be harder to see those lights. So we want to remind people to look up down the roadway a little bit. And I know sometimes it's hard to tell what lane they're in. So obviously you need to slow down. So when you do get closer to them, you can make that proper lane change if you need to proceed by them, you know, slowly and safely.
With the bulk of the winter season still ahead, DeVault reminds motorists to ensure their vehicles are ready for tougher conditions, such as tires with adequate tread. Page County officials continue to explore repairs to the venerable courthouse's roof and clock tower. At its regular meeting Tuesday afternoon, the Page County Board of Supervisors met with Farnsworth's Kelsey Vetter to discuss the proposed replacement of the courthouse roof and how the project will be bid out. Discussion follows the roof and north side of the clock tower sustaining hail damage last summer. Page County Auditor Kristen Wagoner says insurance is willing to cover most, if not all, of the costs, with the total project estimate ranging between $1.4 and $1.5 million. However, Vetter says the base cost estimate for the roof itself is just over $600,000.
The courthouse roof, all the copper roofing, that would be the base bid. And then okay. we would have an add alternate, which would be to remove and reclad the entirety of the clock tower and then bring it back and put it back in place. And the intent is that a single contract would be put in place for this work to be done. So you'd have a single general contractor who would do both of these items. They could potentially hire a subcontractor to do the roofing and a subcontractor to do the clock tower work.
Vetter says the estimate from the original clock tower manufacturer came in just over $722,000 to reclad the entire tower. She says the recommendation is to reclad the entire tower rather than just the damaged portion due to the possibility that the work and joints might not line up correctly, as well as the tower's aesthetic.
If you were only to replace or fix the north side, which has the most damage, it's very likely that any work done in that area would not match the rest of the clock tower. Weathering and fading changes colors of metals and colors of everything over time. And so there's concerns that it would be quite different.
Vetter says the original manufacturer indicated it could take anywhere from 26 to 34 weeks to reclad the entire tower. But due to the high price tag, Vetter says the clock tower is recommended as a bid alternate.
They would come and take down the entire clock tower, ship it to Kentucky, reclad it, bring it back, and put it back in place. And that's a big chunk of change. And I know there's some concerns from both Kristen and Judy about the dollar amount associated with that. So most recent conversations have been to list that as an alternate in the bid documents so that we can at least at a minimum get the roof replaced and see where we land with insurance as far as the clock tower portion is concerned.
Vetter says if the board ultimately chooses to reclad the clock tower, the hope is to have the tower back in place before Thanksgiving next year. Supervisors Chair Judy Clark notes a significant logistical undertaking is necessary in order to remove, transport, and replace the clock tower.
The courthouse itself is 67 feet high. The clock tower is also 67 feet tall. So we have the two that are the same, which I learned when we put it all back together again. So trying to get scaffolding or anything else clear up there could be a major issue.
Supervisor Judy Clark. A district court judge ruled this week that Scott Belt cannot return to his seat on the Pottawatomie County Board of Supervisors. Ethan Hewitt had the story.
Judge Roger Saylor issued the ruling from the bench Thursday afternoon after hearing nearly 2 days' worth of arguments and testimony in the case brought forward by Pottawatomie County Attorney Matt Wilbur. A legal petition was filed by Wilbur against Belt last month, citing Belt's actions at a town hall meeting in Carson on November 5th and several other incidents of alleged drunken conduct by Belt. In his ruling, Saylor concluded the evidence was enough to take the extraordinary measure of removing Belt from an elected office whose term runs through the end of 2026. OKMTV Southwest Iowa reporter Katrina Markle had reported that arguments made during the trial at the Pottawatomie County Courthouse centered around whether Belt was intoxicated while performing his official duties, with the defense arguing the town hall, which is not mandated by state statute, did not qualify as an official part of a supervisor's job and that Belt was there voluntarily. Per Iowa code, an appointment to fill the vacancy is expected to be made by a three-person committee, including the county auditor, treasurer, and recorder, who have 40 days from the creation of the vacancy to do so. In a statement, county officials say that deadline would be Christmas Day, since Belt was temporarily removed from office after Wilbur filed his petition. Officials added that they had opted against filling the vacancy immediately to allow Belt to have his case heard by the judge. Well, Belt has held a public office for nearly 30 years, with time on the Board of Supervisors and the Council Bluffs City Council. He was also the top vote-getter in the 2022 general election for county supervisor. Ethan Hewitt reporting.
Fremont County officials are allocating opioid settlement funds to county law enforcement. At its regular meeting Wednesday morning, the Fremont County Board of Supervisors unanimously approved allocating $8,823 from the county's opioid settlement funds toward the purchase of the Narcotics Crisis Canine Vehicle Kennel and associated equipment for the Sheriff's Office Canine Unit. The money comes from an agreement that the Iowa Attorney General's Office signed on to in 2022 that provides money for manufacturers to help abate the opioid crisis through prevention and treatment. County Sheriff Sergeant Andrew Wake says the move comes as they have replaced their canine vehicle.
The kennel and the safety measures for the dog, which is like a door popper, and the heat alarm, so that if the dog gets too hot, it sets an alarm off to the officer's phone or pager and sets a tones off and honks the horn to let people know that there's a dog in distress, possibly in the vehicle.
Wake says the opioid dollars would also free up some of the department's vehicle budget. He adds the project fits into the state guidelines for how the money can be spent, including law enforcement expenses directly supporting opioid response, intervention, and the safety of first responders.
Expanding training and equipment for first responders. The dog gets listed as a first responder within the county. It's a county employee, county piece of equipment, so that works on that. It supports diversion connections with care. And, you know, one of the first steps on people with addictions is law enforcement and the courts to try to force that first step into treatment. And so that's in connection with law enforcement is usually the first step into people going into treatment.
Wake adds the canine unit frequently assists in opioid-related incidents for scene safety and detection. Caitlin Mertfeld is director of Mills County Public Health, which shares its services with Fremont County. Mertfeld says the opioid settlement fund currently has around $92,000, with roughly $36,000 earmarked for the current fiscal year. However, before Wednesday, she says none of those funds had been obligated.
And we're looking at trying to get more prevention programs up and running, so we'll hopefully be back within the next month or so here with some to request funding for some different prevention programs using a substance abuse counselor that would come in.
While saying they tried to transfer existing kennels to a new vehicle, Wake adds the body styles of the cars often change year over year, resulting in the old kennels typically not fitting the latest vehicles. Waubonsie Mental Health Center officials are seeking Montgomery County's contribution to a new program addressing opioid addiction in the region. Andrea Gomez, a substance abuse counselor with the agency, asked the county's Board of Supervisors Tuesday morning for funding from its remaining opioid settlement funds for a new program offering substance abuse treatment for its clients. Gomez cited statistics indicating Iowa reported 359 overdose deaths in 2024. She also says opioid deaths are high in Southwest Iowa.
Between 2014 and 2018, counties in Southwest Iowa, including Montgomery and Union County, had the highest number of opioid prescriptions filled per county resident. I was quite shocked to see that as well. A 2019 report stated that Adams County had one of the highest prescription overdose deaths rates for a rural county in Iowa. So Union and Adams obviously are not that far from here.
Gomez says Waubonsie Mental Health saw the need to expand its services to offer substance abuse treatment amongst its clients. Gomez says tackling addiction through co-occurring treatment is essential, and it improves patient outcomes.
So when you have co-occurring treatment, which is the treatment of your mental health and your substance abuse disorder treatment, there's reduced risk of relapse, there's better treatment retention, and patients are more satisfied. It's also been shown to be more cost-effective because the people that need these services the most are the ones that usually end up hospitalized, in jail, or have infectious diseases. So if you improve patient outcomes, these costs.
Funding allocated by Montgomery County would cover curriculum purchases, transportation to treatment, funds for all staff development, and training, retention, and supervision, expanding telehealth access and technology, social media campaigns, and marketing. Action on Waubonsie's funding request was not listed on the supervisor's agenda. More discussion is expected at a future board meeting. Following the recent consolidation of two local haulers, Red Oak officials are rebidding the city's contract regarding the recycling dumpsters early next year. At its regular meeting Monday evening, Red Oak City Council unanimously approved a resolution clarifying that Town and Country is now the city's partner on the 28E agreement for transporting the recycling dumpsters, and that the contract will be rebid at the start of the new calendar year. The move follows Town and Country's purchase of Batten Sanitation following the retirement of longtime Batten Sanitation Vice President Lynette Bruce, indicating the council can give preference to the company already handling the contract. City Administrator Lisa Cotter says the city does have some level of due diligence to rebid the contract.
I think some level of due diligence is probably wise. And just like Kevin said, he's learning himself. So I'm not suggesting that we have to bid it out immediately. I'd like you to say, yes, we're for sure using Town and Country until we get to the point of doing it. But I'd like probably until after the holidays to prepare the bid document, if you'd like to do that and be able to see. Most of our surrounding communities actually don't use the private sector. They use Page County. And Page County, Brian is the manager there. He did talk about that he could also service this. And I said, if the council bid it out, would he put it in?
And once the city is ready to rebid the contract, Cotter's request would be open only to the four companies currently servicing Red Oak or to a government entity. Town and Country's Kevin Carlisle indicates while he is new to recycling, he is working with representatives in the Page County Transfer Station where the bins are hauled to see if there are potential cost savings. He says while cardboard is heavily used by the community, other items such as glass and tin do not fill up the dumpsters nearly as quickly.
So just so you guys do know as you move forward with this, I'm trying to work with the guys and figure out a way to, if there's room to cut some costs, you know, if they got to deliver, you know, if they got to take that cardboard down on Friday, you know, afternoon, I mean, at the end of the day, if it has to be done.
Connor notes it'll likely be January or February before the council goes through the rebidding process. Christmas decorations abound in KMA land with the holiday season well underway. And not to say bah humbug, but even if you've already put them up, safety is still the concern. Shenandoah Fire Chief Justin Marshall is reminding residents to take precautions with Christmas lights and other holiday decorations in order to avoid a tragedy. Speaking on KMA's Morning Line program Wednesday morning, Marshall says historically major holiday-related fires during his quarter-century tenure with Shenandoah's Fire Department have been rare. One reason is the shift from real to artificial Christmas trees in many homes.
Many years ago, I can remember the first few years I was on this department, we did have a little more issue with real trees drying out. People tended to use them more back then. Now you don't see that as much. I can recall a few structural fires where the person was home and was asleep on the couch, and they had some candles going, and they got too close to the tree. The tree was drier than they thought, and they could have lost their home. We were able to get it extinguished fairly quickly.
Marshall says the advent of LED lights have also improved safety factors. Still, he advises residents to check the light strand conditions before hanging them. Marshall also recommends against overuse or overloading power cords and strips. Well, that wraps up this week in KMA Land. Be listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. And for more information all the time, log on to KMALand.com. You can also hear this program in its entirety. For the entire KMA News team, this is Mike Peterson. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. This Week in KMA Land, a presentation of KMA News, keeping the region informed for 100 years.